Hi.
Last week, I went to a drive-through COVID-19 testing center in Cambridge, Massachusetts, which is offering free tests to all residents. It was right there in a parking lot.
We're going the other way up and drive-through.
Okay, next stop. Thanks.
Yeah. Medical personnel working out of a trailer, swathed in protective gear and helmets, directed me to the test.
Oh, now somebody's coming up.
Robin?
Yes.
Hi.
There it was, the stick with the swab we've all heard about, going up my nose.
It can be a little uncomfortable.
I heard. Should I just take the top of my mask?
Below your nose, yep, and you're going to rest your head back.
Okay.
Just try to relax, okay?
Okay.
1, 2, 3, 10, 9, 8, 7, 6,
oh boy.
5, 4, 3,
okay.
2, 1.
Okay.
Awesome. This is great.
It's a little sting.
Yeah. So you'll get a call in 5 days.
That's it?
That's it.
Thank you so much.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
That's that. And I waited for the results. Now, there are a lot of questions about COVID-19 tests. How accurate are they? How often should you test? President Trump says the U.S. has tested more than any other country, but critics point out that we started later and are behind when it comes to per capita testing, meaning we have more people. And given that, our testing rate is pretty low. Dr. Anthony Fauci recently told NPR that our testing capacity is getting better, and he anticipates we might be where we need to be in the early or late fall. But where is that? Dr. Matthew Hines is an internist at Tucson Medical Center and was director of provider outreach for Health and Human Services under President Obama, where he assisted in the Ebola response. Dr. Hines, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
And I'm sure the suspense of my test results is killing absolutely no one, but I did finally get the call that I'd tested negative, which I was told in that call could be a false negative and could change. I could have been affected as soon as I left the test. And because of that, some people say, why bother testing? Dr. Sanjay Gupta told us the importance of testing is to find people who are positive and then trace their contacts. Do you agree?
Absolutely. And I would never discourage people from being tested. I think it's so important to gather as much reliable testing data as we possibly can to help track where the virus is, where there are hotspots, and address that by directing resources properly.
You've said you agree with Dr. Fauci that there's been progress.
Well, certainly overall the numbers of tests have gone up, that it's easier to order them as a physician. But for example, the rapid test is still very, very limited. Even in the hospital setting, it's very difficult to get the test that comes back in less than an hour. And in terms of distribution around the country, where we need to be doing more testing in hotspot areas like the Navajo Nation and in other areas where we can identify an increasing number of cases, we really need to be directing and making more testing supplies available in those areas, not having enough nasal swabs to obtain a sample or reagents to run the test once they get the sample.
By the way, you talk about the more rapid test, for instance, that President Trump and people in the White House are getting. Does that have the same concerns about, you know, maybe false negatives?
It does. They all have some inherent trouble in terms of potential for false negatives, which, you know, when you have tests that can in some cases have 15, 20, 30, maybe even higher false negatives, as a physician, I'm going to give you the same advice as I would give you if it had come back positive in many cases, right? But yes, the rapid test is particularly useful when it is positive. That helps us figure out where to safely admit patients to the hospital. It allows us to move forward with surgeries because it wouldn't be safe, of course, to be intubating people that are actively shedding virus for an elective procedure that would expose people unnecessarily. But again, those rapid tests are still very hard to come across, even in the hospital setting.
Well, and you know, you said you ordered a test for a patient and it didn't come back for 12 days. And you may have a patient in a hospital who's going in for something else, not knowing that they may be infecting people.
Exactly. These are patients that I'm seeing that have some kind of constellation of symptoms. Depending on what study you look at, we could be dealing with half of those infected having zero symptoms and still actively shedding a virus and just not knowing it.
You talked about an elderly gentleman who came in with his wife. You know, sounds like they were really in tough shape. She tested positive. He tested negative. You had to kind of do a little detective work and think, well, that makes no sense.
Exactly. And I didn't believe for a moment that he could not be positive for COVID-19. We immediately checked another nasopharyngeal swab. Luckily, we did have the rapid supply to do this. His rapid study came back within an hour as being positive. We were already assuming that.
Why does that happen? Is that because the way the test is administered, we know in the regular test, this stick, as I said, gets inserted into the back of your nose. But is it because it's being done wrong? Why are there so many false negatives?
I think it's multifactorial, and for sure, the difference in sampling technique is, I think, a major one. Most of the manufacturers recommend that nasopharyngeal swab be placed to the back of the nasal cavity and held there. The testing instructions I've seen say 20 or 30 seconds. If they're not pushing it all the way back, and it's uncomfortable. No one likes to, you know, make someone squirm, but it's very important. You got to get that little swab into the right area and hold it there for long enough so that a good sample that potentially has those viral particles there can be obtained. Honestly, the tests are only as good as the samples that we feed into them. So that is a major problem. I think also if there's any type of delay potentially, I know this was something that Abbott was bringing up about their testing that had high false negative rate, their rapid test. And one of the issues that they identified was the length of time between obtaining the sample, putting it in that reagent solution, and then getting it to the actual device that does the testing. If there's a significant delay there, that can cause some false negatives as well.
Couple things that I want to ask about what you've said. First of all, you said people who test negative and positive, you kind of tell them to do the same thing. But if somebody is positive, don't they really have to quarantine, can't leave
Absolutely.
The house at all, live in a separate part of the house than other family members? Whereas somebody who's tested negative, they're just only going out if they have to. Isn't there a difference?
There is. That's absolutely true. In a hospital setting especially, you know, when we get those positive results, for example, preparing someone for a surgery, bringing them into the hospital, that process stops.
How often should someone get tested, given that you could get infected, you know, as you leave the testing site? And we also know there's a shortage of tests, so you don't want to use too many.
So for sure, if people are having symptoms or think they've been exposed, those are situations where we absolutely need to have testing. But more broadly, I think we must have more testing for sure in our hospitals, our nursing homes and rehab centers. And if they're going to be admitted to the hospital, they should just get a test. I mean, not every day, obviously, but for sure in a symptomatic situation. Also in general, I just think we need to up the testing rates overall. We're going to get through this faster and with, you know, more people alive, frankly, and less illness, the more people get tested, the faster we can get up to that minimum level of testing, which depending on the experts you believe, close to about a million tests a day we should be seeing probably in the United States overall. We're about a third of the way there, about 400,000 tests that we're doing. When we get to those levels, we know we can reopen stuff more safely and kind of get things back to sort of the way they were with some modifications.
Why don't we have enough tests?
I truly don't know. It has been absolutely frustrating and confounding to me ever since I tried to order my very first test on February 5th, which was a 3.5 hour long process. The public health department of my county didn't have any, and the state of Arizona's public health department called us back. They didn't have any testing, and eventually we were able to get the person tested, have their sample couriered to the state, and overnight, I think they flew it to Atlanta to the CDC, which was literally the only place in the country for weeks that had any kind of test. A part of the testing did get messed up early on, but there was a test the WHO developed forever ago that we could have just used as soon as that one didn't work. And I don't understand the decision making. It's just a very different department at HHS, which the CDC is housed in, than when I was serving. I don't know. So a combination of bad luck, and I don't think the scientists were allowed to be in charge of this. Either way, we're catching up finally, but it has been a frustration for me personally as a physician and all of my colleagues in the healthcare system that I work with that we're seeing these for a while there, tests coming back in 10, 12, 8 days later. That's just clinically useless. It's extremely frustrating.
Dr. Matthew Hines, Tucson internist, also former Health and Human Services Director of Outreach. His previous pandemic experience includes assisting with the domestic Ebola response in this country. Dr. Hines, thank you so much.
My pleasure.